You're listening to The Offside Rule. We get it. World Cup specials.
Hello and welcome to our final World Cup special podcast. It's The Offside Rule. We get it. Reunited with Hayley McQueen. It's myself and Kate Borsay. And Hayley, let's hear your voice first. We haven't heard it for a while.
Hello, long lost McQueen.
How was your summer? So good to see you. And by the way, we spent 2 weeks. I was at 2 weeks in Brazil. Kate slightly longer. And yet you're browner.
Yeah. Great British summer. We've had a great time here. No, I spent the end of the season. I actually went and was part of the World Cup, but not in Brazil. I did the Miami leg. Just having a holiday. Watched the Honduras and Ecuador games. Absolutely brilliant. Loved it. Had a really nice time in Miami. Saw friends who live out there. Then headed down south a little bit and went to Mexico and watched Mexico in a bar in Mexico, which was pretty cool. So I saw the beginning of the tournament all kick off. I missed the opening ceremony. I still haven't seen it, which is really bad. But I saw a lot of games on holiday, came back into Sky Sports and doing World Cup report, World Cup verdict, and obviously just the rest of all the sporting news. And then I had to nip to Ibiza. Yep. Had to be done for a long weekend because a friend got married. So that's been my World Cup. And the rest of the time, I've just been sat in my flat or I've been up to Fat Ronaldo's, which is in Shoreditch, to watch the games, which has been fun.
Have you enjoyed the World Cup? And who were you rooting for throughout it? Because we've had adopted teams, myself and Kate. We'll update people on what happened there. But yourself, I mean, who were you cheering on?
Well, obviously England. I was cheering on England, but that didn't last very long, as we all know. For years and years and years, Portugal has kind of been a bit of a second team because Portugal's like a bit of a second home when I go on holiday. My family have holidayed there since we were kids. I'm quite often in Portugal when the Euros or big tournaments on, you kind of veer towards supporting them. Because my dad's Scottish and hates England. He doesn't hate England as a country. He lives in it. He's been living here since he was 19 years old. So he should be grateful that we've welcomed him with open arms. So yeah, he just has this hatred of the English national team because he is so very Scottish and passionate. And he feels that the Scotland have been hard done by all these years with the press and everything, but hey ho, that's just him. So he quite often on holiday will be supporting Portugal just to rile up England fans, which is pretty cruel. But I was born in England, so obviously we'll support England. If they play Scotland, that's another matter.
I think we, speaking for myself and Kate here, both deep down realised that England weren't going to go that far. So as a backup, we had an adopted team. Mm-hmm. And this is what happened. So Kate actually picked out Holland, didn't you?
Yeah, so I got all the way through and just changed it once to Argentina, which I wasn't that happy with, if I'm absolutely honest.
Well, yeah, that's the rule, see, that whoever knocks out your adopted team, you end up following them. So you ended up with Argentina in the final. Mine was a bit more a bit more of a journey because I pulled out England. England then got knocked out by Uruguay, so I had to support Uruguay. Uruguay got knocked out by Colombia, so I had to support Colombia, to then have to support Brazil, to then support Germany.
Wow. Well, at least you ended up with Germany. I did obviously follow Holland quite closely because of Louis van Gaal, and I'm excited about him coming to Manchester United. So again, I wanted them to get to the final, even if they didn't win the final, just to have a World Cup manager who's managed in a final to then come to the Premier League to manage a team. That was quite exciting for me.
Absolutely. By the way, I will rub in that even though that long, convoluted journey, I got Germany.
Yeah, I know. After all that, you ended up winning, which I just thought was a bit sort of not particularly fair.
I know. Let's also talk about a couple of players. Now, who's really impressed you? I mean, we'll come on to topics in a second, but just in terms of stars of the World Cup, who did you really like watching?
Well, all the ones I thought were going to impress me didn't. And the kind of unknown names that came out there, really impressed with. I wanted to keep a close eye on Paul Pogba. Rafael Varane is someone who I've highlighted again on the podcast a couple of seasons ago at Real Madrid, a new defender coming up through the ranks. Goalkeepers, so many of them, really impressed with Manuel Neuer. Rodriguez, of course, just completely shone this tournament. There have been quite a lot. I could probably list you more than that, but those are the ones that have just sprung to mind straight away.
I think we're all still scratching our heads, aren't we, about Messi getting the golden ball?
Well, I'll mention that a little bit later on, actually, because I know that you were a big trumpeter, if I can say that.
trumping away.
She's, yep, trump, trump, trump.
That you were a big advocate of Messi and before this World Cup, you were like, this is going to be his World Cup. I predict he's going to have the best World Cup ever. I think he did have a good World Cup, but I don't think it was great.
I don't think it was exceptional. And I think the final kick of the ball in that final with his free kick just summed that up, really. But saying that, I think it's been one of those 50-50. I think there's been 50% of times in this World Cup that he's been exceptional. Mm. He's really single-handedly dragged Argentina through some of the rounds. And then in other occasions, he's been a bit quiet and he hasn't had the service potentially that he needed or the players around him. But I thought in the World Cup final in particular, he was quite quiet.
Yeah, there are other players that I have picked out. Messi definitely is one of them. It's not one of them that's up there for me. I'll mention them later because they could be linked with a move to the Premier League.
That's something we're going to be talking about. So let's get on to that. Winners and losers. We're going to pick two World Cup winners, two World Cup losers. It can be anything, really. Team, manager, country, fan, anything. We're also going to talk about moves from the World Cup. We always get transfer speculation, don't we, off the back of a big summer tournament. So players that we think will be linked to the Premier League potentially, or just to England. I can't see any going to the Championship. Yeah. We'll have Sue Smith, who will have our WSL roundup, because that's all back up and running. In fact, in the Continental Cup this weekend, did you know that Chelsea ladies beat London Bees 13-0?
What? That's ridiculous.
I know. And we'll unleash Sue on you for the WSL roundup later. Let's have a quick chat then about World Cup moments that made us smile. And also, by the way, there is still videos that people can watch on our YouTube channel. We did quite a few of these. Did you manage to get a look at any?
I did see a few and did have a little smile on my face, but was slightly jealous at the same time that you were there and I wasn't.
Well, check that out for yourselves. YouTube.com, The Offside Rule TV. Also, we've got loads of World Cup content still there on our website, offsiderulepodcast.com. Lots of it's still relevant as well because there is a lot of transfer speculation. Moments that you made you smile. I have to say that single-handedly, Colombia and their goal celebrations made me smile. They had the best goal celebrations.
Costa Rica and their fans. I think the fans throughout the tournament made me smile, but the fact that they were just so shocked about what they were seeing from their own nation, and they were just brilliant. They were everywhere.
I just like those little random moments. It kind of makes me smile that Joachim Love is called Yogi Love. I just, you know, Yogi Bear. I just love stuff like that. I love the moment that all the commentators realised that James Rodriguez was actually James Rodriguez. So James became James. And suddenly we're like, James? James who? And you're like, oh, of course, James is obviously James in Colombian. So that kind of defining moment where a commentator or most of the people working on a World Cup realise that they've been mispronouncing a player who they've not heard much about before's name completely wrongly. I kind of get tickled by those little random moments.
Out of a bad moment, the Suarez bite incident, I must admit what's made me smile are the amount of photos, if you go on Twitter or Instagram, where people are taking a pretend chunk out of someone's shoulder with a World Cup themed background.
There's been jokes about him wanting to have a bite of Philip Lahm and, you know, Lahm and Lahm, Lahm. Yeah. You know, really bad jokes like that.
Got any more for us?
No.
That's when social media and Twitter were just absolutely brilliant, because suddenly you see this stream of photos, like a few games ago when Tim Cahill tweeted a picture with the 7-1 result. We all know that game. And it was his hand over his mouth that he was looking shocked. And I saw this hashtag, Tim Cahilling. I was like, what? I didn't understand. So I clicked onto the hashtag. And Tim Cahill had posted his picture, and all his followers had then decided to post a picture of them doing the same wherever they happened to be watching. And there were pictures from all around the world, from kids to granddads to teenagers to gorgeous girls in bars watching the games, all just with a hand over the mouth. That kept me entertained. It was so funny. I loved it. So I think social media was something that made me smile, because when I was on my own, maybe just at home watching a match because I had to get up early for work, I'd go on Twitter and just kill myself laughing when I'm just scrolling through some of the feeds.
Anything else that's made you really smart? There's loads, isn't there? I mean, the atmospheres in the stadium. It felt like, I'm going to bring up Colombia again, but when I went to the Maracanã, which I did, Hayley, and saw the Uruguay-Colombia game, saw the James Rodriguez volley, which I have to say I think was goal of the tournament.
Oh, our James.
James.
Bye.
But it felt like you were in Colombia. The crowds, the Colombian fans were brilliant, really good fan.
Yeah, we stayed in Búzios, which is a a town about 3 hours out of Rio, and we stayed there.
Don't say miles, it was definitely hours.
Yeah. and we stayed there for the kind of second part of our stay after England were knocked out. So we did a little bit of recuperation, a little bit of work there. And I just love the way that the Brazilians stop for their national side. And we saw this at the airport, actually, going from or to Belo Horizonte, in that the shop shut, can't get a taxi. There's just such support behind the national side, which is what makes the story behind what happened to the Brazilian side even more sad. But I really loved the support, the town centres having screens up for every single match so that at any point during the day you could go and catch a game or two, depending on how much time you've got, in a local town square, sitting in a nice plastic chair with possibly a caipirinha.
Yeah. Tell you who else made me smile, USA. Yeah. Really love.
Yeah, and Obama getting involved in it as well with his phone call to Tim Howard. Brilliant.
Did you see Angela Merkel last night after the final? She was beside herself. Oh, she was whipping up and down and hopping and scopping everywhere. It was brilliant.
Just saw the whole team at the end, this really cool picture of the national team and Merkel just murking on in there in the middle.
You've actually invented a whole new word, murking.
Murking.
Fantastic.
It's got nothing on twerking, I tell you. No, it's got everything on twerking.
Yeah. Rihanna was there talking of twerking. She's a twerp, isn't she? Supporting Germany now? How did that happen?
We've talked about moments that make us smile. I'm sure this is going to carry on through our chats. But let's get on to topic one, winners and losers. So this is just anything within the World Cup, because it's not just Germany that go away. Well, they are the only ones that go away with the World Cup, but they're not the only ones that go away as winners, is worth saying. We've got quite a few winners to celebrate and a few losers too. I'm going to start with Hayley.
Okay, let's go for winners, goalkeepers. I think goalkeepers stole the tournament in this one. Normally it's the strikers and the amount of goals, and there were plenty. For a World Cup which had so many goals, a joint record, the goalkeepers came out on top. And to think that Tim Howard, who we've just discussed there, and Guillermo Ochoa were left out of the Golden Glove nominees list. That is just how strong it was. So many of them shone. It was a really, really exciting one to watch. Would have said Julio Cesar up until a certain game, but Navas of Costa Rica was in there. Thibaut Courtois, who caused so much controversy during the Champions League as a Chelsea loanee of Belgium, had a wonderful, wonderful tournament as well. David Ospina of Colombia, the manager of the other team, single-handedly blamed him for his own side's loss. Yeah, so the Uruguay coach basically said that he was extraordinary and had made sure that his team had lost, and it was all down to the goalkeeper. Hugo Lloris of France was up there as well. There were just so many. You could just list them all. And one of mine actually comes up a little bit later with a link to the Premier League, which I do actually think will happen. But I just think it was so just different that the goalkeepers were scoring the limelight, and all the fun Tim Howard stuff that came out after that was brilliant. And when someone changed on the Wikipedia page straight after that USA game to Tim Howard, Secretary of Defense for the United States of America, was absolutely genius. Another winner for me, what about all the gadgets? Goal line technology worked brilliantly, didn't it? No controversy.
And shaving foam.
I loved it. That was one of my highlights. That magic spray. I remember the first time I saw it being sprayed down, thinking, what the hell's he doing here? How are they ever going to get that off? This is just a mess. And it just poofed, disappeared. So all the inventors of the little gadgets that we saw used throughout the tournament really worked. The ball as well. No kind of Jubilani problems that we had in South Africa. So I think the gadgets definitely worked well.
Two World Cup winners for me. Howard Webb. I mean, we've got to celebrate something English from this World Cup, haven't we? Thought he performed really, really well throughout the tournament. Certainly did our reputation as a provider of world-class referees no harm at all. Him and his assistants, Mike Malarkey and Darren Cann. Thought he was very good, actually, in that round of 16 game, Brazil versus Chile. Possibly may have got one of the decisions regarding Holt wrong, but overall, I thought he put in an incredibly respectful performance across the games that he officiated. He also did the Group C game between Colombia and Ivory Coast as well. So I like the way that he allowed the games to flow. He got the majority of his decisions right. So I thought, yeah, World Cup winner, Howard Webb, well done. My other World Cup winner, Javier Mascherano. Now, we know he's good, okay? Obviously, I've followed him closely when he played for Liverpool. He's done great for Barcelona. He's not always had a consistently brilliant time at Barcelona, although he's, you know, certainly found his position and found his natural talents, or certainly had managers that will work with his natural talents on the pitch now.
But the way that he drove the Argentina team forward, so much pressure on Messi, of course. And it was Mascherano who I thought drove that team forward, never gave up, just a constant in that team. Anyone, in my opinion, who commits themselves to a tackle so wholeheartedly that he splits his rear parts. Sorry to get dirty again. Did you know this?
No.
I think I'll have to explain afterwards, but those of you who know will know what I'm talking about. To commit to a tackle so wholeheartedly that something tears has to get my vote, basically. So Mascherano gets my vote. His bottom might not feel like it at the moment, but for me, he was a beacon for the success of Argentina at that tournament.
One of the winning things I'm going to mention, or Iron Robin aside, is the lack of diving. I didn't think it was too much this tournament, because we've seen so much. I know that in the last Euros and the last World Cup, it was something that made me really roll my eyes on occasions, because it's the part of football that I really hate to see. And although there were incidents and there were things that happened, I didn't think it ever was the leading factor in a match. I don't think it ever overshadowed what the game was. So I'm really pleased that we didn't have too much diving. Another winner, I've got a winner and loser, Netherlands. Because I've got to say to them that Louis van Gaal in particular must be a winner, because as he rightly pointed out, they did not lose a game. They came third, but they didn't lose a game officially, did they? Because it doesn't count if it's not in proper time. You know, get knocked out on penalties doesn't count really, does it?
No, definitely not.
Louis, it does. But I think you're a winner anyway, because actually to go on such a run through the whole of the World Cup, whereby it did take penalties for them to lose a match, is an achievement. So I will stop being so sarcastic on that. But what I also will say is that they're also losers, because the Netherlands, they do this, don't they? Major tournament after major tournament, they get so near, but yet so far.
I wasn't expecting them to win this one, because I knew that there was a certain amount of inexperience. Where I'm interested to see what the Netherlands do is in France in a couple of years' time, and in Russia as well, because that, for me, a bit like Germany, really, having matured at this tournament, is where the Netherlands are going to mature into.
Another loser, Cosmopolitans and mojitos. They're definitely losing, because the Caipirinha, it's all about the Caipirinha now. So that's our winners and losers. Have you done your losers?
No, but I'll tell you who my losers are. Rodrigo Palacios and his hair. That awful little rat tail plait. I was hoping it would have disappeared by the final. It just made me feel a bit sick. Yeah. It was horrible. I thought maybe he's a Buddhist. But apparently there's rumours that his girlfriend plaited his hair once many years ago, and he won a game and he kept it going and he's had to grow it ever since. But it's just a bit weird. And just chop it off and he becomes a whole different person. Other losers, apart from Brazil and their woeful tournament, unfortunately. Spain, complete losers. And I think Spain and Spanish football now losing out to German football on the Bundesliga. Since Pep Guardiola decided to go and manage in Germany, it's like, ooh, Spain aren't the dominant force in European football anymore. It was great to have a European side in the final, but it's all about Germany. And when you look at the stats as well, 14 members of the German squad were 25 or under. So youth in this tournament was a winner. Spain's youthful side that has now got Iker Casillas, who's knocking on a little bit, they're going to have a massive overhaul by the next tournament for the Euros in 2 years' time. I don't think there'll be much change with the Germans, because they have so many young players becoming through. A lot of the players right now in their prime, but some of them just reaching their prime. Yeah, think about Götze, exactly, for the next tournament. I just think Spain, the one good thing for Spain that happened was the Brazil 7-1 drubbing, because it meant that the attention has now been turned off, and it wasn't the tournament that Spain went into with so much promise and crashed and burned. It was now known as the tournament with the losers of Brazil, of course, creating all the embarrassing headlines. But for me, Spain, just massive, massive disappointment. And the fact that they were the first side out of the tournament and the group stages finishing third is just not good enough.
Your losers, Kate?
Lionel Messi. I know this is harsh, but he's one of my World Cup losers. I'm sorry, he failed to score after the group stages. Okay, he might have scored 4 goals in 3 games during those group stages, but, you know, Bosnia, Iran, Nigeria, okay. Couldn't score against Switzerland, Belgium, Holland, Germany. Had that gilt-edged opportunity, as we spoke about, early in the second half of the World Cup final. Missed that, fluff that. That was one of his chances to become a great. Golden ball, well, that's decided, actually. This year was decided by FIFA's technical committee, as I understand it, not based on a media vote. So read into that whatever you will. Roy Hodgson,
there's another one of my World Cup losers. I felt all right about England after they went out, and Linz will probably back me up on this, and the England going out felt okay because we were on the crest of a wave with just all things World Cup, and it didn't matter because we were going to have another team and we'd be following the World Cup still. But now I'm home, I've got a bit more angry about it, and I've got a... My kind of anger's based, you know, centred towards Roy, actually, I have to say. The nation got carried away before Brazil. We thought we were going to do great. There were a few glitches along the way, but it was all undermined. All the kind of disorganisation and the lack of consistency for me was just more centred around our cuddly national manager. Italy was great. Uruguay was frustrating. Costa Rica. Well, after Costa Rica, he said he was pleased that he gave the England fans something to cheer about. I just thought, well, that's a bit rich. Thank you, Roy. Can't help thinking that for the majority of the tournament, it was more about the skill of a few of the individual England players rather than about some overriding genius leadership from the man from Croydon. Just didn't inspire me. Sorry.
The man from Croydon. We're going to take a little breather. We're going to show Hayley a few pictures from the World Cup. You ready for that?
Yes, please.
Here's Sue Smith with our WSL Roundup.
Check out all our latest World Cup content on offsiderulepodcast.com.
Hi, everyone. I'm back after a few weeks off with my women's football roundup. You're probably wondering what we've been up to in our mid-season break. Well, some of the girls have been away on holiday. Unfortunately, I haven't. And then it's straight back into training. It's been another mini pre-season for us. And along with all that, there's been a little football tournament going on, which I'm sure all of the girls have been gripped by. You know, the World Cup's been fantastic. Despite England going out in the group stages, I think this has probably been the best one that I've actually seen myself. Oh, and one more thing, I did have Germany in our club sweepstakes, so that makes it even better for me. Okay, back to women's football. For the last 2 weeks, we've been playing our final games in the group stages of the Continental Cup. This is to see who progresses into the semi-final, and it's only the top one of each group that gets through. This is like a great opportunity and experience for WSL 2 teams to play against WSL 1 teams. However, there has been a few embarrassing results which have come out, which doesn't look good for the women's game, and hopefully, you know, that won't happen again. But the four semi-finalists who have progressed are Notts County, Arsenal, Manchester City and Chelsea. Notts County beat Yeovil 4-0 on Saturday. This was a really convincing performance from County, and Rick Passmore, the manager, was very happy. And for him to say that, he's an absolute perfectionist. So I'm thinking that the girls have definitely done well. The victory, however, was tainted by a potential serious knee injury to Sophie Bradley. I've got everything crossed that it's not too bad, because she's not only a great player for club and country, but she's such a lovely person. So fingers crossed that that isn't too bad. Okay, second, Arsenal, they booked their spot into their semi-finals with a 4-0 win over Millwall. It seems like the FA Cup final win for them has just given them that little bit more confidence, and they'll be looking to move up the league after, you know, getting into the semi-final for the Continental Cup. Chelsea are the third team through. They thumped London Bees 30-0. And like I said earlier, for me, this doesn't do anything for the game. You know, we want a competitive and exciting competition. And this takes it back to how women's football was a few years ago. So like I say, hopefully that doesn't happen again. I don't want to take anything away from Chelsea's performance, because they were awesome. And for me, you know, the standout player and somebody that I'm really pleased that she seems back on form is Rachel Williams. She's been had a niggly injury for a couple of months, and she bagged a hat-trick in this game and, like I say, looked back on form. And then the final semi-final spot goes to Manchester City, who beat Durham 3-0. They've qualified ahead of, you know, some great teams in their group, not only Doncaster Bells, but also Liverpool and Everton. So that's going to be a confidence boost for them, and something that they can then take into their league form. Okay, that's all for me from this week. Hopefully speak to you all next week.
Thank you very much for that, Sue. We were listening, but also flicking through photos at the same time. Let's talk about that impending season and new faces that may be arising courtesy of the World Cup. It always throws up players, speculation, people we think will be moving. And I have to say, there's players that we think will move to England and players who I'd love to see in England, like James Rodriguez. I wish, I absolutely wish. But we'll stick with the realistic, shall we?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so two players who you think would secure a transfer to the Premier League this summer as a result of their World Cup performances. Starting with Hayley again.
I'm going to go with player who plays for the Netherlands, who will be coming to Manchester United. It seems a bit of an obvious one, an obvious link, because Louis van Gaal will be wanting to bring in the players that he loves and knows to Manchester United and link up nicely with Robin van Persie as well. He's not going to be there forever at the end of the day. So out with the old, in with the new, in with Memphis Depay. Had a brilliant season with Eindhoven. He is a super sub. He's had a wonderful tournament, scored twice for Holland in Brazil. Very clinical in front of goal, very clever. They call him the impact sub. I think for me, he was one of the standout players of the Holland side that I didn't expect at all. I'd heard of him. I just think he's really exciting. He became the most youthful Dutch goal scorer in World Cup history. Imagine being described as youthful. Those were the days. He's only 20 years old. So I think he is likely, the fact that he's so pacey, got so much in him, will be happy to be a squad player at Manchester United and come on up and be nurtured by the likes of Van Gaal, who knows exactly where he plays best and how to manage a player like that.
There could be a few Dutch link-ups there. Iron Robin reportedly saying that he wants to stay at Bayern, but the door is definitely open for a move should he want it. Kate, one of your suggestions.
I looked at Giancarlo Gonzalez for Costa Rica, a centre-back, and so many clubs in the Premier League need a good centre-back at the moment. It's hard not to ignore him. His story is brilliant because he was discarded by a Norwegian side earlier this year after not impressing for a couple of seasons. Went to Columbus Crew, who are in the MLS, of course, came to the World Cup and did amazingly well. Played four games, really, really strong centre-back performances. Organised his back three really well, which I thought was good. Pull people around. And you know, he for me epitomises, you know, someone who would work really well in the Premier League in that centre-back role. Not afraid to boss people around. His side only conceded two goals in the tournament. I thought it was excellent. Didn't put a foot wrong for me. In terms of where he will go, will Liverpool need a good centre-back? Of the top five teams that finished the Premier League last season, they had the worst defensive record. Man United, they could do with a centre-back too. They were linked to Matt Hummels, weren't they? I don't know quite what's happened there, but of course they're going to be linked to a lot of players. And you know, also his boss at Columbus Crew had said if they get an attractive offer, he hasn't denied that they wouldn't look at it. And for me, if you're a player and you're in the MLS, you've had a great World Cup, you're 26, you'd just go straight there, wouldn't you? You'd just go straight to the bigger club.
26 seems to be the magic age, you know. And Juan Cuadrado, who played for Colombia, he's been brilliant over the World Cup. 4 assists, a goal as well to boot, and playing for Fiorentina at the moment. 11 goals that he scored in Serie A last season. So he is a man to maybe get a few more goals for a team in the Premier League. That sort of side that need a secondary striker, someone to back up and get a few goals. I could see him really coming to the Premier League. Manchester United have been muted, but I don't know. I feel maybe Arsenal could be his home, just because Man United are being linked with so many players.
Yeah.
Maybe Arsenal will go in for Cuadrado, and I'd like to see him playing in the Premier League. He was an exciting player to watch in the World Cup. My only fear when we do topics like this is that they have a great World Cup, they come to domestic football again and sometimes filter off, but we'll see. Another one from you?
Yeah, you mentioned Arsenal there. Another one of mine, potentially... he has actually been linked with Arsenal because they are apparently looking for a new goalie. They were in for David Marshall, but he's too expensive. Guillermo Ochoa, one of the players I picked out as having a brilliant tournament.
Is this Kate's favourite one that looked like Mickey Mouse?
Yeah, this is it. He's a free agent at the moment. It just depends how things are going with Arsenal with the whole situation. And the fact now that Arsene Wenger will be looking for backup and looking for somebody to come in and replace Fabianski. Now he hasn't got that really solid, I would say a number two, but you know what I mean, a number two to the number one. And the fact that David Marshall is too expensive and maybe wouldn't have wanted to be backup and sitting on the bench. Maybe this is Ochoa's chance to come in and be that player.
I would absolutely adore to see him in the Premier League, though. We need a crazy keeper, don't we? We're lacking one. We really are.
So he kept actually clean sheets against Brazil, of course, maybe after the 7-1. That's not such a big thing to claim. He made 6 vital saves. That was a rate of 1 every 15 minutes. Real imposing figure in between the sticks, claiming 7 loose balls, only conceded 1 goal during the group phase of the competition. So he became a free agent. He was 28 during the tournament. He celebrated his 29th birthday, celebrating in Las Vegas on a World Cup day. He was out partying with Javier Hernandez. I thought maybe you'd talk him into going to United, but they've got De Gea. It just depends whether they want backup and whether he would come to the Premier League as backup and just hope that he does get his chance. Maybe not a first. I don't think Arsenal would bring him in and put him in ahead of Szczesny. However, I don't know. Maybe somebody else out there could give me another Premier League team who could be looking for a goalkeeper like this.
Very briefly, before I hand over to Kate for her final one, I'm going to do mine. Paul Pogba. Now, this was my tip, my player to watch out for in the World Cup. I have to say, he went ahead and won Young Player of the Tournament, didn't he? I was a little disappointed in him. I thought he showed moments of magic and moments of what he can do, but it never really lit. It never really properly took off in this tournament. But I do think he'll be one to watch in the next couple, in the Euros in France. Can you imagine? In France, he's going to be such a player to watch out for. But Chelsea muted to be after his signature. And Paul Pogba, I think he'll be an exciting player for this season ahead.
Yeah, I think so. I think it was a lot to do with France never really getting into gear for this World Cup either. And I had the same problem with Griezmann, who I was watching out for, and even less so than sort of Pogba. They didn't always start every single game, and I wouldn't have necessarily called them impact players. I thought they both had a good tournament. They didn't do themselves any harm at all, but a bit like France. Had France advanced further, perhaps they would have got an opportunity, but I didn't felt that either of them seized the opportunity with both hands and made themselves run out superstars.
And whilst you mentioned that, and we talk about all of our great memories and we've done winners and losers in the World Cup, I have to say I was disappointed with that France-Germany game. France-Germany, it doesn't come round very often. I literally had got out all the stops. I'd got the popcorn in, I'd got the Kypre on the go, sat in front of the telly, ready for a great night. And it was a bit damp squib, wasn't it? It was just 1-0, a bit boring. I was disappointed in that.
Yeah, I think I was too. Another player, so I think someone who could make a possible arrival in the Premier League, Daley Blind of the Netherlands. I thought he was really good. He's only 24. He's at Ajax.
Not blind.
It did tickle me.
I did hear that a few times on the commentary.
Yeah, exactly. It did tickle me right at the beginning of the World Cup when they were like, do you know that Netherlands got blind player? Anyway.
They were dying for the Netherlands not to do well, blind leading the blind.
Yeah, exactly. But Daley Blind, as it's properly pronounced, gave the Netherlands width. He's actually a left back, but he can play in the midfield as well. And obviously Liverpool after a left back, although they've just about there with Emre Can from Bayer Leverkusen. And
by the way, Witwoo.
Thank you.
Sorry,
thank
just wanted to add that in.
He's actually an impact player, but he can play at left back too. Alberto Moreno as well, that interest has been renewed as we record this anyway, about him from Seville. So I think that left back position is covered for Liverpool. So I would suggest Chelsea, Manchester City, although they're very constrained on spending at the moment, Manchester City, they couldn't go in for Luke Shaw because of that. You could look at Man United, of course, with Evra heading to Juventus most likely, but it depends how you're going to use Daley Blind really. But yeah, I think he'd fit in really, really well in the Premier League.
Thanks for that, ladies. I actually think we've run out of time. We could carry on talking of the World Cup forevermore, couldn't we? We hope you've enjoyed our World Cup specials. Do tell your friends if you're still wanting a World Cup fix, because there's 3 more you can download and have a listen to. OffsideRulePodcast.com, also at OffsideRulePod on Twitter. And please, for the sake of myself and Kate Borsay staying up all night sending videos, check out the YouTube page. We really did do that. We stayed up all night, didn't we?
Yeah, several times.
YouTube.com/TheOffsideRuleTV. Bye-bye.
The female take on football, and this time from Brazil.